Okay, so Linda Barassa and I had a conversation this morning that led me to believe that I might not be the only person who ever has this happen to me. Have you ever had a project grow before your very eyes? Like, it happens to me all the time. Take, for example, my kitchen. The cabinets need to be wiped down. But if I wipe down the cabinets, I really ought to go ahead and get out the paint and touch up where there are little spots that have been rubbed off. And if I get the paint out to touch up the little spots, I really need to paint all of the walls in my kitchen. But if I paint the walls in my kitchen, then the staircase that goes up to the back has these little puckery places that need to be sanded down before I paint. And so I don't wipe the jam off the kitchen cabinet. That kind of logic is what has taken hold of the people in Corinth. Paul told them about the collection for Christians in need in Jerusalem a year before, and they had started collecting, and they were excited about it. They were going to send this offering off to Jerusalem and help the people there who had sent Paul forth and who had seen the need to be missionaries and who now found themselves in need. They were excited about collecting for this, and every Sunday they collected. And they were so excited that when Paul was in Macedonia, he had bragged on the people in Corinth. And every week, faithfully, they saved. And then something happened, and they stopped. Now, it may have been that during their dispute with Paul, they stopped and they had gotten out of the habit, and they just hadn't gotten that habit started again. We all know how hard it is to get the habit started to collect and to save and to give. But I think we have a clue that perhaps it was more the sense of being overwhelmed at the size of the full need that stopped them. Because Paul says, it is appropriate for you who began last year not only to do something, but even to desire to do something, now finish doing it, so that your eagerness may be matched by completing it according to your means. They heard about a need, and they wanted to do something, and so they had started collecting, but they stopped. And Paul says, now finish collecting, so that you can complete your offering according to your ability to do so in a way that matches your eagerness. And he also reminds them with a nudge that they're a wealthy port city. And all of these other towns where Paul has gone who have faithfully taken a collection for Jerusalem don't have what these people in Corinth have to give. They're smaller. They're more rural. They are poor churches, and they have given sacrificially. And the church in Corinth that has more has stopped altogether. And Paul says, I don't want you to send so much to Jerusalem that you end up in need, but I also don't want you to sit back and say, well, we're not going to be able to solve the problem, so we're not going to contribute to the solution. Here's the thing. It happens to me over and over again that my eagerness gets boiled up, and then I see not just this size problem, but this size problem, and I go, well, I can't do all of that. And so I find myself not cleaning the jam off the front of the cabinet because I really don't have time to repaint the whole room. I do the same thing with gifts. I think about someone, and I think I really ought to send a card to them. And then I think, you know, a card, that's just really my, I really should send them flowers. But flowers are so impersonal. What I really need to do is fix them a basket with some goodies and some toys for their kids to play with. And that book that I think would be really good for this particular crisis that they're going through. And maybe I should go ahead and bake them some cookies because I know they really like to have tagalongs. And I could make some cookies that are kind of like tagalongs. And then, you know, since they're going up to the hospital every day, I probably should fix them a little emergency kit of some deodorant and some soap and some toothpaste and a toothbrush. And then all of a sudden I think, I don't really have time to bake and run all over town, and so I'm not going to be able to put together that basket, and then I don't even send a card. Does that ever happen to you? Paul tells the Corinthians Do what you can that matches your eagerness. Go ahead and write that card. Go ahead and wipe the jam off the front of the cabinet. Our team just returned from our third year in mission in Spuhill, Mexico. Talk about a place where need can grow right before your very eyes. Education is not required for children. Bottled water is the only water available that doesn't have to be boiled. A typical evening dinner would be that hot chocolate that I told the kids about with some saltines to dip in it, or perhaps a bowl full of animal crackers. Jobs are labor-based. Crops struggle. Why? Seemed like to me a good question to ask. But the answer is too complicated. The people are indigenous. Most of them speak Chol. Many don't even speak Spanish. They were moved here to this part of the country by the government. Government programs abound, but the programs rarely meet a need by the time they actually get implemented because they have to filter through corrupt government contractors. So, much like wiping the cabinets or writing a card, securing water is a necessary, immediate action, even though there's a bigger picture of need. We found that some of the houses we went to already had a cistern, and I thought, well, they've got a cistern. Why do we need to build a cistern here? Well, that cistern was a government cistern, which meant that it didn't have rebar, or if it did have rebar, it wasn't much rebar. And it's a smaller cistern, so even though it might hold water for a while before it cracks, it won't hold enough water to make it the 6 months that they don't have rain. So some of the houses had spigots, too. I thought, well, you've got this small cistern and you have a spigot in the ground. What's that connect to? So I asked about the spigots. Well, the government contractors came through, and they put a pipe down in the ground, and they put a faucet on it that would turn. But you know what? They didn't connect it to anything. And if you put a pipe in the ground and you put a spigot on the top, you still aren't going to get water. They put in some water treatment systems, and some of them actually did connect to the spigots. But they didn't ever maintenance them. So even in the big city of Spuhill, where we stayed, which was like the county seat, they have running water in the tap. And maybe 2 or 3 days of the week when you turn the tap, water comes out. When I turn the water on at my house, you know what happens? Water comes out. Every single time. Water that is predictable and dependable, and it's drinkable. We are blessed in this country. We are blessed with an infrastructure that works almost all the time. And I found myself in Mexico wondering how to improve their government programs, how to teach them the value of education and better farming techniques, and all that I would put on them of my values and my blessings would change their culture. And I don't know where to start. It would be easy to walk away overwhelmed and say, that problem is too big for me. But Paul says, do what you can to match your eagerness. Water. So we poured foundations. We built walls for two of the cisterns. We put roofs on two other cisterns. And the families who were getting the cisterns in that community, they worked together on each other's cisterns. And they worked right alongside us. And every person worked hard. And we eagerly did what we were able to do. And we shoveled gravel and sand into 5-gallon buckets, and we dumped them in the cement mixer, and then we dumped the cement into wheelbarrows, and we wheeled it over, and we shoveled it into buckets, and we dumped it into the forms. And we became one work team. We were united in purpose. We were getting to know each other, and in the midst of it, even though we couldn't communicate, we started really caring about each other. The families offered us hospitality that was truly sacrificial, and it was incredible. As we were generous with each other, God's grace was evident. And as we said our goodbyes and we looked into each other's eyes, we exchanged our thanks, our gratitude. The concepts of generosity, grace, and gratitude, it seems to me, are intricately connected. And I think the Greeks thought so too. The Greek words for grace and generosity are different forms of the same word. And the word for gratitude is built onto that base word. The word for grace is charis. And more literally, it means what I told the kids, expressing God's blessing. Charis, grace, expressing God's blessing. And the word for generosity is charon. And it means experiencing God's blessing. I'm sorry, I just did that wrong. Charis is experiencing God's blessing. Charon is expressing God's blessing. So we receive grace and we show generosity. God's blessing coming in and going out. And then the word for gratitude is eucharistos. The eu means pleasing or happy, and the suffix tos at the end means one who is. So eucharistos means one who is pleased or happy because of grace or generosity. One who is pleased or happy because of grace or generosity. So when we experience hospitality, we are eucharistos. What does that word remind you of? Eucharist. That's where we get the word Eucharist. This is where we experience hospitality. This is where we experience grace and generosity. Where we are generous, where we express God's blessing, we receive grace. We experience God's blessing. And our response is gratitude in that exchange, back and forth. It's almost like breathing. Generosity, grace, gratitude. Generosity, grace, gratitude. We are grateful for it, just like we're grateful for the air we breathe. And the source of that is Christ and the Lord's Supper. Because here we are grateful. Here we experience God's grace as we experience God's blessing. Thanks be to God. Amen.